Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 27, 2022. The medical charity, known by the acronym MSF, denounces the killing of three medical workers in Darfur.
We are incredibly worried about the impact this will have on people, especially those wounded people in Krenik.
And several Christian organizations call on President Salva Kiir to free detainees in South Sudan.
We're very concerned about the situation in South Sudan right now. And, you know, we have been for a long time, but we don't see it getting any better.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The international medical charity Medicines Sans Frontières, or MSF, has condemned the killing of three medical workers during recent intercommunal fighting in West Darfur State. MSF field official in Darfur says a local hospital and a pharmacy operated by MSF were attacked and looted by armed men. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
MSF officials say three staff members, all male Sudanese nationals, were shot and killed while on duty at the Krenik Hospital last weekend. They say the main pharmacy, which is attached to the hospital, was also attacked and looted. MSF field operations manager Bakri Abubakr condemned the killings and looting, saying it violates international humanitarian law. Abubakr says MSF officials were shocked by the attack and offered condolences to the families of the victims. Abubakr says MSF worries about the future of its operations in the area and the negative impact of such attacks on those who rely on the facility for medical care.
We are incredibly worried about the impact this will have on people, especially those wounded people in Krenik who can't have medical care, the medical care they need due to the hospital destruction and fleeing of the staff. Also with the inability of being transferred to Al Jineina due to the insecurity on the road.
Sudanese Dr. Adam Zakaria confirmed to this program that Al Jineina Referral Hospital was also attacked during the fighting on Sunday. He says the staff had to run for their lives. The hospital remains closed for the fourth straight day today as medical workers do not feel safe to return to work. Emily Wambugu, MSF's project medical representative in Al Jineina Teaching Hospital, describes the attack as traumatizing. Wambugu says patients were terrified by the sound of gunshots fired within the hospital.
We were very, very busy. It is the first day of the week. The inpatient department was full of patients admitted, and the OPD, the triage area, it was full with so many patients, approximately 200 patients that were waiting for consultation.
Wambugu says she worries about the impact of the lack of health care for residents, especially pregnant women and children who need immediate attention. Abubakr says MSF staff will only return to work when conditions are safe.
Currently, our teams are closely following the security situation to ensure that we can start working and provide the much needed medical care and the humanitarian assistance as soon as possible and as soon as it is safe for our teams to do so.
Abubakr called on the warring parties to adhere to international humanitarian law and to guarantee the protection of health facilities and health workers.
In conflicts, medical structures and medical staff are protected by the international and national laws, and this has to be respected by all parties to any conflict at any times, without any exceptions.
Local officials say at least 200 people were killed and dozens of others wounded during the clashes between Arab nomads and local farmers in Krenik. The Sudanese Security and Defense Council has ordered additional troops to be deployed in West Darfur to prevent fresh outbreaks of intercommunal fighting in Krenik and the state capital Al Jineina. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A group of faith-based and other organizations in the United States and United Kingdom have written an open letter to President Salva Kiir expressing their concern about the future of the country. The signatories of the letter say President Salva Kiir must implement the recommendations of 2020 National Dialogue that included the exit for both Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar from power. The group also called on President Salva Kiir to put an end to the conflict, guarantee freedoms and civic rights to all citizens, and allow democratic transition for the young nation. Faith McDonald is the director of advocacy at Catatisma Global, one of the signatories of the letter.
We're very concerned about the situation in South Sudan right now. And, you know, we have been for a long time, but we don't see it getting any better. And we don't see President Kiir looking to wise advisors, but being advised by people who don't have the best interest of South Sudan in mind. We've had a long relationship with South Sudan, and our expectations upon independence, and knowing Salva Kiir the way some of us have for many years, we were really hoping that things would start to flourish and thrive, you know. Meanwhile, there's so much poverty and such a waste of opportunity. It's really heartbreaking when we know, you know, the potential that South Sudan has.
You express quite a lot of disappointment in your letter with President mm-hmm. Kiir and how things have been going. You as church groups and, you know, and other entities concerned with the situation in South Sudan, you all fall under the Friends of South Sudan. Do you have direct contact with President Salva Kiir?
I have not had contact with President Kiir directly since my last visit to South Sudan, which was way back in 2016. I believe that there are people that we're in contact with who do have direct contact with him, though, but he has not. You mentioned the first letter. Part of our disappointment is because he did not respond directly to the first letter. In fact, because of my relationship with President Kiir over decades, I think that there was an effort to reach me through other people in his government. But we are waiting to hear from him. We don't want to hear from people who are assistants to the assistant ambassadors and things like that. We need Kiir to take this seriously.
You mentioned in your letter that failure to heed your concerns and to respond to them, to act on them, mm-hmm. might force you as a group to support alternative leadership in South Sudan. Can you break it down to me a little bit?
Sure. We're probably the last group that even, you know, has tried to reach out to President Kiir in a way that is both granting, you know, grace and understanding to him. You know, I mean, in our first letter, we talked about the fact that we know that in many ways the U.S. government failed him. When South Sudan started to have problems, even back in 2013, there were the Obama administration at that point didn't try to understand the situation more clearly, and to understand that President Kiir was doing some things that he needed to do at that point, because the government that he had been freely and fairly elected to was being threatened So, you know, so we talked from that point of view of being people who really supported President Kiir, supported a belief that he was doing the things he could do to make South Sudan a great nation, having faith in him and things like that. And then being basically the only ones left who felt that way. At this point, you know, we do feel a lot of disappointment. And we've said pretty, you know, it's not a harsh letter. It's mostly just laying out the facts that these things need to change. So we laid out in the letter that this can't continue. The legacy that he has as one of the heroes who brought independence to South Sudan.
That's Faith McDonald, Director of Advocacy at Catatismo Global. She was speaking to my colleague Nabil Biagio here in Washington. Two UN agencies are launching multi-billion dollar appeals to assist the soaring number of refugees from Ukraine and people displaced inside the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The worsening situation in Ukraine has prompted the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, to double its initial $1.1 billion appeal. That appeal was launched soon after Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. Since then, OCHA estimates the number of people needing humanitarian aid inside Ukraine has increased from 12 million to 15.7 million. OCHA spokesman Jens Lajerke says his agency's revised appeal for $2.25 billion will assist 8.7 million of those worst affected people over the next 6 months.
The appeal covers a range of support from cash assistance, food security and livelihoods, health, shelter, protection and water sanitation and hygiene, to mention some of the larger interventions. Continued international support will be essential to enable humanitarians in Ukraine to continue to reach those whose lives have been upended by the war.
The UN Refugee Agency also has revised its initial appeal upwards. It now is seeking $1.85 billion to support a projected 8.3 million Ukrainian refugees and communities hosting them in eight neighboring countries of asylum. The number of expected refugees is more than twice the estimated figure of 4 million the UNHCR had predicted would need help when the war broke out. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu calls the current situation highly dynamic and fluid. In just 2 months, she notes 5.2 million refugees have fled Ukraine in search of international protection.
It's anyone's guess as to exactly when we will reach this 8.3 million figure, but if we're looking at the trend so far, this displacement has been on such an expansive scale, and the rapidity of this we haven't seen in recent times. So these displacements are still occurring every day, every hour. We're seeing people continue to flee Ukraine.
The appeals are being launched against the backdrop of continued fighting, destruction, and displacement inside the country and flight to safer areas abroad. The UNHCR calls the human impact and suffering already caused by the war staggering. It warns the trauma of war will have a lasting impact on many forced to flee their homes, 90% of whom are women and children. It adds humanitarian needs will continue to grow. Displacement and the human tragedy will not cease until the war is brought to an end. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, a Russian mercenary is captured in Mali. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you told someone you appreciate them? And what was it for?
I don't remember the very last time, but what I can remember now is telling my girlfriend that she was beautiful. She is beautiful, and I can't just let her go.
Just this morning, I did appreciate my daughter for the progress that she's made and for working so hard and for everything that she's doing, you know, trying to learn things, doing this. There are many things that she's really surprising me for. So, yeah, just this morning, I did that.
2-3 days ago, it was just to say thank you and show more encouragement. It was my daughter for coming first position in school, and I needed to appreciate her so that she can continue on that same track.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Al-Qaeda-linked militants in Mali say they have captured at least one Russian mercenary from the Wenger Group, a private military company with alleged links to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Annie Rosenberg reports from Bamako.
Extremists linked to Al-Qaeda say in a statement they have abducted at least one Russian mercenary, who they describe as a soldier of Russian Wagner forces. An Arabic version of the group's statement claimed they abducted one Russian fighter, who they called a criminal, while the French version said they had taken more than one. The statement also claims that Wagner forces took part in an operation in Moura, Mali, which it says killed hundreds of innocents. Several countries have accused Mali's military government of working with forces from the Wagner Group, a shadowy private company that has provided Russian mercenaries to several countries, including Libya, Syria, and the Central African Republic. The Malian government denies any links with the Wagner Group, saying it only works with official Russian trainers. The Moura military operation mentioned in the extremist statement was a subject of a report by Human Rights Watch. The report quoted witnesses who said white soldiers working with the Malian army killed 300 civilian men, some of them suspected Islamist fighters, during a five-day operation. On Saturday, the French army released a drone surveillance video, which they say shows mercenaries burying bodies in the sand near Gossi, Mali, where the French army withdrew from a military base last week. Similar video circulated on Twitter 2 days earlier and accused French forces of killing the people seen in the video. Speaking to AFP, the French military said the mercenaries staged the mass grave to tarnish the image of France. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Ukraine is one of the world's largest exporters of wheat. The invasion of the country has led to soaring prices of bread in countries like Zimbabwe. The Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe is warning of possible bread shortages in the country after Ukraine was forced to suspend shipping.
Early as November last year, we were unable to load wheat from that region because the political tensions have gone high and insurers had revoked their coverage. This is a supplier who have been supplying us good wheat, accounting for 65% of the wheat that we need. Suddenly, we woke up without that supply. So that's the crisis that is there. The inflation on bread, the price increase on bread is an important factor. Now we are making efforts to see how best we can get from other countries. Australia, there's issue of floods and which affected the agriculture. We're now pushing towards getting wheat from Canada and other countries.
That is Fadezwa Mosorara, head of the Grain Miller Associations of Zimbabwe. Ukraine annually exports 40% of its wheat and corn to Africa. Analysts had earlier predicted that the war in Ukraine would lead to a shortage of food exports to the continent. But is the war in Ukraine the only factor behind the increase in prices of wheat in Zimbabwe, a country once called breadbasket of Africa? To answer that question, my colleague Jackson Vunganyi reached Musimba Kuchara, a Zimbabwean economic analyst based in Harare.
So I don't think the war in Ukraine is the only factor which is at play here. You should also remember that a lot of the bread, or most of the bread that is sold, is pegged in the Zimbabwean dollar price. And the Zimbabwean dollar has been losing value, seriously losing value over the last couple of months, despite what the officials have been telling us.
And how does this increase of in prices of bread impact the life of Zimbabweans? Who does the increase affect mostly?
It's the general public, because bread is one of the staples in many homes. So the increase in the price of bread is disruptive to the monthly budget of most Zimbabweans. So with the erosion in the value of what people are earning, in salaries, and then these increases, it becomes a recipe for disaster.
Now, is there local capacity to fill up the shortage of wheat in the country?
No. The truth is that there isn't. There are a few schemes by government, winter wheat growing and so on and so forth, but we basically don't have the capacity. Also considering that the wheat that is required for bread, I understand, is slightly different to the normal wheat that we grow. So in terms of bread wheat, we don't have any local capacity to fill in the gap.
Does the increase in the price of bread indirectly or directly impact other sectors of the economy? Does it lead to increase, say, in the price of other goods?
It does. Usually it's followed by the increase in other basic commodities. We are looking here at cooking oil. We are looking here at mealy meal, which is also one of the staples. We are looking here at sugar. So usually the increase of bread also heralds an increase in other basic commodities. And what that has an effect of is that people whose earnings are in Zimbabwe dollars continue to then be very, very unable to sustain a monthly basket of basic commodities, because then their little earnings are unable to sufficiently cushion them for the money.
That's Musimba Kuchara, a Zimbabwean economic analyst based in Harare. He was speaking with my colleague Jackson Vonganyi. Still on food issues, the United States says it is scaling up humanitarian assistance to the Horn of Africa to save millions of people facing widespread hunger. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Speaking to reporters yesterday, a senior official from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, said the U.S. government has committed millions of dollars in additional humanitarian assistance to respond to the devastating drought in three Horn countries. Sarah Charles is USAID assistant to the administrator for the Bureau of Humanitarian Affairs.
Today in Geneva, the U.S. is announcing more than $200 million in additional humanitarian assistance from USAID and the State Department to respond to the drought in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. This brings total support for the region to more than $360 million in this fiscal year alone.
Across the region, she added, the U.S. aims to provide critical emergency food and nutrition assistance, safe drinking water, sanitation, hygiene supplies, and medical care. Charles said the level of need was staggering.
More than 20 million people across the Horn will need emergency food assistance to meet their most basic needs in 2022. This is more than a 70% increase compared to the region's last severe drought in 2016 and 2017.
The assistance, coupled with unhindered humanitarian access to conflict-affected areas and greater donor investment, is urgently needed to save lives and livelihoods. The drought, which has left more than 15 million people severely food insecure across the Horn area, is the region's worst food crisis in 40 years. Elizabeth Campbell is the U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for the Population, Refugees and Migration Bureau.
In fact, refugees, conflict victims, internally displaced persons and asylum seekers can be particularly impacted by the severe drought. They're especially vulnerable. They can be forced to move because of lack of access to water and basic necessities.
Campbell said the situation in northern Ethiopia is worrying.
In Tigray, in particular, in northern Ethiopia, we are facing really almost unprecedented challenges with access in terms of bureaucratic obstruction, conflict, violence, difficulty reaching those who are most in need with assistance. We've seen over the last 2 weeks, small convoys of assistance, the latest one actually yesterday, reached Mekelle for the first time in several months over the last couple of weeks.
The U.S. officials said the Russian invasion of Ukraine has exacerbated the problem. Sarah Charles explains.
Much more is needed, especially as the Russian Federation's war in Ukraine only threatens to further compound the drastic needs as food prices rise and the region can no longer import critical wheat from Russia and Ukraine.
She further urged the international community to help fill critical gaps in the emergency response to help save lives. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now end the show with Russ Corby and the song Fee Sabab.
Fee Sabab, the Kulu Hajal Behasil Fidunia. Fakun Bala, Matastaji, Makum original Russ Corby.
Lazimi confi sabab, yeah.
Fi sabab.
Lazimi confi sabab, oh.
Fi sabab.
Lazimi confi sabab, yeah.
Fi sabab.
Lazimi confi sabab, oh.
Fi sabab.
Para buna kala kutunia, yeah.
Fi sabab.
Para jibizo ujumara, yeah.
Fi sabab.
Para woman bira bayah, yeah.
Fisabab,
bachamit wakamra bitala, lazim.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, yeah.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, oh.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, yeah.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, oh. Fisabab, bajono binda galu fikaba, ay. Fisabab, nastan inside the rulina. Fisabab,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fisabab, shanem shikita. Yeah.
Fisabab,
oh, nah. Oh, oh. Oh, 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 oh. Papa wa mama kanita ya wa mainda kawa lazimi konfisa ba ay kanita mabiga weti bigita shrap menzi fisa ba papa oh kanata shilo bitro bitaki wenta derte dafi fisa ba papa.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, yeah.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, oh.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, yeah.
Fisabab,
lazimi kun fisabab, oh.
We have been listening to Russ Corby and the song Fisabab. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Fisabab, sabab, sabab, sabab. Fisabab, sabab, sabab, sabab. Fisabab, sabab, sabab, sabab. Sabab, 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 sabab.